The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop looking at that crap.
You gotta get off.
I mean, who cares what my uncle David in New Jersey thinks about how you played? He doesn't know shit. He's a lawyer, okay? My uncle David is a fucking lawyer. He doesn't know shit.
But on Twitter,
and he's missing a tooth. It's true.
Yeah,
Uncle David's missing a tooth. Obviously, lawyering's not going well if he can't afford another tooth right now.
But he does know some stuff, but maybe just not about football.
Yeah,
right?
He's an intelligent human being, but it just was I can't even remember what we're ranting about there, but people on Twitter.
It must have been players looking at people's comments on Twitter.
It was some of the guys that went off the handle a few weeks ago, right? Right. So, all right, we got a good one here today. Week 11 review. We got Give Me the Headline. We're going to do deep dive on Arizona, San Francisco. Deep dive on Houston, Baltimore. All right. We got some damn okay coming. Mm-hmm. What else we got?
Victory lap.
This
is where you celebrate being right and everyone else being wrong.
Suck it, America. And then we got odds and ends. Yeah. We're going to try to hit every game because that's what we do. And Ahmed, I'm sure,
that's
has a little tidbit.
My favorite thing to do.
I know. We have to deliver to the people. So, I mean, let's not BS anymore. You're good. Let's
go right into it.
Yeah, life's good. Weekend's good.
Weekend was good.
Great.
Yeah. Good. It's raining today, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. It's Monday. What the hell are we going
to
do?
I always
anyways?
Say this. You need those days to appreciate the good days.
Yeah.
Right? The days isn't sunny. If it was sunny every day, you wouldn't like it.
I like rainy days.
Yeah.
It's easy on the eyes. And it makes me less ambitious to go home and want to do anything else.
And the lighting in our studio is more flattering when it's cloudy out, I feel like.
Do you?
When it's very bright, I feel like it's
you
not
look
flat.
Really handsome right Thank now. You look like James Bond.
So if you're listening to this,
you're handsome.
Watch it on YouTube because I have a good day. I'm looking pretty good.
Yeah, you are. You're damn sexy, man. No doubt about it. All right, let's go. Let's get
let's
after it.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start with Give Me the Headlines.
We will
do our first deep dive on Cardinals 49ers in just a second. But Give Me the Headlines. So this is the Pete gave us the three games together here. There's Survival Sunday for NFC Contenders Division.
Yeah.
So here are some teams that needed a big week, needed a big game on Sunday, and some of them got them.
Right.
And one of those teams was the Minnesota Vikings. Didn't look like it was going to turn out that way. They were down 20 at the break. Come back to beat the Broncos. The Vikings improved to 8-3. They win 27-23. And here's my headline for the Vikings.
Yeah.
At 16-1, Vikings now become best value to win the Super Bowl.
Oh.
I think they are a little
You're
gambling.
Going Vegas here,
going
huh?
Going Vegas,
yeah.
Because I feel like people are giving the Vikings their due, but I feel like they're still being underrated
definitely,
a little bit.
Definitely.
That was a game where they could have lost. They're down 20. Still don't have Adam Thielen.
Nope.
Stephon Diggs is stepped
up. Run game
up.
Wasn't going. Denver defense is top five in football.
Yeah, 26 yards for Delvin Cook, and they figured out a way. Kirk Cousins.
Do you like Kirky
up.
Clutch or Clutchy Cousins?
Clutchy Kirk.
Clutchy,
I don't
Clutchy
know.
Kirks. Okay, there's so many ways to go with this.
which is weird because right now they're the eighth most likely to win the Super Bowl, according to Vegas. They're fifth most likely to even get there behind the Saints, 49ers, Packers, and Seahawks in the NFC.
Right.
Vikings are good, and I think they proved it again once they got to the second half.
Yes, definitely. I mean, first off, I think Kirk Cousins is the story there. How many big throws do we got to see him deliver here the last 6 weeks or so? I mean, it's been unreal. And, you know, to be down 20-0 and then, okay, we're not going to be able to run the ball and we're going to have to become a little bit one-dimensional in those things. And I think the thing that just jumps out to me more than anything is the degree of difficulty of a lot of those throws. You know, he's not getting a lot of, like, 5 and 4 yard completions. It's not like that. When they drop back to pass, hey, other than the screen game, they look to strike. It's crossers 15, 20 yards down the field. It's deep posts. It's go routes down the sideline. The Vikings defense really, I think, was a little bit of the disappointment in that game. I mean, hey, it's Brandon Allen. You know, there's no Emmanuel Sanders.
Right.
The Broncos haven't really had a good run game the whole year. I mean, at least not consistently good. And they just leave their corners one-on-one on the outside too much. That's my problem with the Vikings. And you just can't trust them. Xavier Rhodes is one of the most overpaid players in football. He just doesn't make any plays. Trey Waynes covers people but never makes a play on the ball. Mm. And, I mean, that's really what Denver did. Denver just took shots down the field and basically was like, Cortland Sutton, you'll make a play. And he's
and
a beast. He is a beast.
Xavier Rhodes draped all over
him. All over him.
It was maybe the best coverage that Rhodes had all game.
Yeah.
And Cortland Sutton still came down.
He is a big specimen type of receiver. 50-50 balls. When he catches the ball, anything short, he can break some tackles. But, I mean, to your point, though, the Vikings are more dangerous than I think people are giving them credit for it. Now, I don't think I'm going to question their offense a whole lot as we go here. I think it's going to be their defense that I'm going to question a little bit more against some of these upper echelon teams.
So I looked at the defense for the Vikings, and on a per-play basis, which I like to look at, they're 12th versus the run in the NFL, 11th versus the pass.
Right.
Where they've been really good is opportunistic in the red zone. They're 6th best in the red zone.
Makes sense because they don't blitz, so they drop 7 a lot of the times.
3rd best in a goal-to-go situation.
Oh, so, there you go.
So that's what they've done.
Yeah.
You give them credit for doing that.
Definitely.
You know, those are things that also could turn the other way on you.
If you're playing real good teams, yes, you're right. You're playing Rodgers or Breeze, and they get down there, and you know Dak Prescott and company, that could be scary. It definitely could. But they primarily play zone down there, and their front four is good enough, but I do worry about their front four. Once again, I'll say this. This is the time of the year for the third year in a row where you see their front four start to fall off because they don't have great depth up front. That's my biggest concern about them more than anything. But good for Kirk Cousins. I mean, that's amazing. Coming back from 20-0, making that happen was pretty awesome.
And like you mentioned, that passes 10 or more yards down the field. He had 5 of 8 for 160 yards and 3 of his touchdowns.
Yeah.
3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So, and Stephon Diggs was big for that, 121 yards for him.
And this puts it in perspective a little. Yeah, Diggs is balling. Yeah, I'm glad you brought
him
up.
Huge year.
Yeah, huge year. I mean, ever since it was like, I want to get traded, it's like, all right, let's feed him, and he's been on fire.
And even more impressive without Adam Thielen.
Definitely.
Too,
because the focus is on you. Yeah. Vikings, to your point, though, Vikings defense is 15th. You know, the offense is 9th. So that just tells you the offense is something to be reckoned with, and Kirk is on fire. Do we have a drive chart? I wanted to see the drive chart because Pete Demolitis.
Yep.
He said there was a drive chart, and I really wanted to see it. He was bragging about it all day.
As bad as they were in the first half. So there it is. It's singled up next to your face, and you can be Vanna White. It goes, here's the drive chart. First half, punt, 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 fumble, fumble, punt. And I think Kirk Cousins had one incomplete pass, but also had like just 50 yards passing. So they really did nothing. And then you go to the second half.
TDs.
TD.
And it's not like a short field. 75, 75, 62, 67. Yeah. So that just tells you it all there, too.
That was a good second half for them.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I am Vanna White, if you didn't know.
So Vikings get the win.
Yep.
They needed it. The Saints needed it too because they had the upset loss against.
We're going to the Rams Chicago first. Get your shit straight.
Okay.
Drive. Okay, fine.
Which one do you want to do?
No, I want to go Saints now. You want to go Saints? I'm going Saints.
You know why I did that? Because I talked about the Vikings being the best value to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the Saints, weirdly enough, I don't know if I'd agree with it.
What?
They have the best odds right now, according to a lot of Vegas sports books, of getting to the Super Bowl of any NFC team.
Okay.
Would you agree with that?
I understand it. I don't agree with it. I don't think they're better than the 49ers
still. You put the 49ers one, then Saints
two? I would, yes. I think that would be the way I would go. Ooh, yes. I think I would. I want to see a little more of that Seahawks defense before I buy into it, that they can do something that they did on Monday Night Football last week. I mean, I want to know if they're an outlier or if this is going to be a consistent thing going forward, then that'll change my opinion. But I understand the thought of the Saints. I mean, hey, it is Sean Payton. It's Drew Brees. People are scared of Jimmy Garoppolo and that whole thing right now.
Right.
So I get them being the best value. But, yeah, I would say they're the second best team in the NFC to me still.
So Saints get the win. They bounce back. They're 8-2 now, beat the Bucs 34-17. My headline for that one.
Yeah.
Saints let the Bucs incriminate themselves. You know, it's like if you're a lawyer and someone's incriminating themselves,
right,
just let them talk.
It's
I feel like that's what they did to the Bucs.
Basically. I mean, the Bucs, first off, let too many of the short passes that the Saints kill everybody with, let them happen. You know, the Bucs did a good job the first two drives of the game in holding the Saints to field goals. But then, like you said, incrimination, self-incrimination. Jameis Winston throws a ball that's right in the numbers of O.J. Howard as he's trying to catch it and tuck it away. It ends up on his back and stays there and gets intercepted, gives them the short field, and all of a sudden it's 13-0. Then they get off the field again on defense, okay? The Saints have a good punt return that sets them up for the short field, and all of a sudden it's another touchdown, and you look up and you go, oh, shit, we're up 20, we're down 20-0, and that was all she wrote. I mean, the Saints defense certainly got back on track, Drew Brees, Michael Thomas were very efficient through the day.
What do you think of Michael Thomas? You had an interesting discussion with Mike Florio.
I know.
The FT.
You're trying to set me up, aren't
you?
Well, no,
he made a good point. Yeah. He's like, you know, if the Saints are going to be the representative or one of the best teams in the NFC, they got to have an MVP candidate.
Sure.
It's probably not going to be Drew Brees. He missed all that time.
Definitely not.
Teddy Bridgewater, even though he was great, you know, he's
right.
not going to be in that discussion. So maybe it's Michael. Maybe Michael Thomas is your dark horse MVP.
Yeah, I'll say I don't always agree with, like, just because your team's really good that you get an MVP candidate. I mean, it's your team is your team, and it's. But I would say yes, Michael Thomas is probably the star focal point of their team. Now, where I push back against people, and again, I know I'm going to sound like such a horrible person here, but I don't think Michael Thomas is the best receiver in football. That's the only one I fight back against. I understand people saying that, but you know, I'm not going to sit there and go, "Oh my gosh, he caught a 4-yard shallow cross route." Who could do that? Who could do that in the Sean Payton offense, who he's been doing that for every receiver ever in the history of his offense? Oh, my gosh.
Right. Not that he's not talented.
No,
but
he's talented. I know. He's big. Yeah. He brings an attitude to their offense. You can throw the ball to him when he's covered. I get all that. I would still tell you, just in Chris Sims' world, all right, that, yes, I would still take guys like Tyreek Hill, Amari Cooper this year. You know, I think you can put a number. You put Odell Beckham Jr. in that offense. Watch out. I mean, I just think there's a number of guys there. But
Stephon Diggs,
we just
talked about.
Stephon Diggs, he would be in that conversation too. I might go Michael Thomas over Stephon Diggs. Okay. I might give him the edge there. I think Tyreek Hill and Mike Evans, like for this year and this year alone, I would probably put them, those two, and Amari Cooper, and then go Michael Thomas. Saints fans, I know you're going to hate me, but either way, that's just the way I feel.
Drew Brees, 4.6 yards of vertical air.
That's what I'm talking
pass,
about. So,
second lowest this week in the NFL.
Well, that's
so
the
crossing those short.
Yes. Well, it's going to be the lowest in football when the year is over. That's just what he was almost last in football last year with those type of things. It just accentuates my point even more. You know, it's a great play caller and a great play designer. And is Drew smart and know where to get the ball out and do all those things? Definitely. I'm not trying to take that away from him. But, you know, again, it's not like Michael Thomas is a really, really talented guy and he's big and physical, like I said. But I don't think defenses are like, you know, they want to stop him because they know he's an important part of the offense. They're not like, oh, my gosh, we're so overmatched by his abilities, we can't put anybody else on him. And let's be serious. The Buccaneers' pass defense is sucky ducky.
So before we move on from this
game. But they're still really good.
There's a really good wide receivers in this game.
Yes.
Michael Thomas being one of them.
Yep.
The fastest ball carrier in the NFL this week was a wide receiver in this game.
Was it Goodwin?
It was not Goodwin.
No.
It was not Evans.
No.
It was not Thomas.
No.
It was a guy by the name of Scotty Miller.
Scotty Miller.
On a 48-yard reception.
I don't even remember the reception.
He's
trying to think of it, too.
He's a rookie sixth-round pick out of Bowling Green.
Right.
Had just 5 catches coming into the game. Was not invited to the combine, but can fly.
What kind of speed are we talking?
Like 4.3.
No, I get that, but what kind of speed did they like, how many mile per hours did he get to?
I think he got up to 19, high 19.
High 19.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was the fastest this week of any ball carrier in the NFL.
Right.
So,
right.
It's interesting. I thought that was kind of interesting.
It is interesting.
They think he can be, you know, DeSean Jackson light.
Well, that would be awesome if they did think that. You know, because, I mean, Godwin's, he's going to command a pretty little price tag here as he starts to continue to dominate and play well. But I mean, the Buccaneers, it's the same old thing. It's Jameis all over the place, as we know. Defense is not good. Too many people wide open. I was shocked that the Saints ran the ball on them, too. And opens up some holes that way. But the Saints got back to kind of what they've been doing the teams all year. Control the clock, dominate on defense. And, you know, again, I think they're one of the best teams in football.
And they got the win. 8-2. They improved their record to now. Now we had a couple of teams that
were
looking to try to get, you know, above 500, close to 500. Rams and Bears on Sunday Night Football. The Rams did get the victory. Not the offensive explosion that maybe you'd expect with a Matt Nagy and a Sean McVay coached teams. That's not the way
they are. Well, last year, but I wasn't expecting it. I thought this would be a defensive struggle all the way.
For sure. This year, what we've seen from both teams so far. My headline for this one was Khalil Mack not returning calls or texts. He's AWOL now. Don't know if that's him or if that's Chuck Pagano's system, but he is not.
He's gone dormant.
He's gone dormant.
He is. But it, you know, so I'll I like that headline.
It's not the story of the game. I
get
know,
you, but it's still. But you're still sidebar. In a game where you think the defense has to kind of win it for them. You would have thought 52 would pop out more.
Correct.
Okay, and I totally understand your point. I mean, Aaron Donald popped a lot last night. Aaron Donald's still the best defensive player in football. I know I've been sucked into this Minkah Fitzpatrick, like, MVP, defense MVP conversation.
What do you mean you got sucked into?
Well, I just, you know, prisoner of the moment, all the pick sixes and fumble returns. Aaron Donald's still the MVP in defense. I mean, that would be my vote. I got to get my shit straight, okay? And self-scout thyself. I was wrong with that. Nobody fucks up plays more than Aaron Donald and what he does.
Yeah.
To your point with Khalil Mack, just real quickly, this would be my assessment. You know, teams play the Bears, and the first thing they go is, okay, how can we lose this game? What can ruin the game? He's enemy number one where that goes. They look at their offense, and they go, whoa, their offense sucks. Let's not take any chances on our offensive side of the ball. Let's not let 52 ruin the game. Because he's still really good when you break it down. He really is. He's phenomenal against the run. He does get around the quarterback a lot. But I think teams are wary of the overall game plan, whether it be, hey, let's get the ball out of our hand quick, okay, and not sit back there so him and Leonard Floyd can come off the edge and strip sack fumble, because we think that's maybe the only way we can lose the game. So that's a big part of it. He's double-teamed a ton. I mean, he really is. Every time I turn it on, whether it's tight ends, backs, people sliding his way. So there's always extra emphasis on him. Plus, there's the Akeem Hicks factor, who is one of the best defensive tackles in football, who's not been there. So now you can even shed some more, let's help out on Khalil Mack stuff that way. That would kind of be my assessment there. But holy crap, did these offenses suck.
They were bad.
Bad.
Bad quarterback play on both sides, you think?
Bad quarterback play on both sides. Yes, Jared Goff's interception was horrible. I mean, to throw that as you're driving in a game where you know, okay, our defense should stop them, and this should be a game that we win maybe, you know, 17-10, 19-16, whatever it is, to make that kind of play, you know.
And that was a weird throw.
It was a weird throw.
Because he threw it behind him. And
there was a guy, and if you threw it in front of him,
it would have been picked,
either way. Right. There was a no-win situation. And I think from that point on, that's when Sean McVay basically said, okay, I don't trust Jared Goff. It's 3rd and 4, we'll run it. Oh, it's 3rd and 6, we'll run it. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's 3rd and 2, we'll run it. I think he got out of the trust tree completely there. And, yeah, I you know, again, Jared Goff, you know, for what he's making and everything like that, he's not a special player. There's no other way to say that.
So they're in trouble, but they got the win.
And they have a special D.
They have a special
defense. They can dominate and win on defenses with Donald, Fowler, Littleton, you know, Weddle at safety, and then of course Jalen Ramsey being a matchup nightmare, it allows them to be even more creative on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, Sean McVay, I thought, reinvented himself a little bit with personnel and formations last night. All those things were good. The run game got going. You could see Todd Gurley's not like a superstar special anymore, right? You know, there was some plays last night where I was sitting there with my little son and my little boy, and we were both, he was like, man, I thought he was going to go there. And I was like, yeah, he's not the same. You know, it's a 12-yard gain instead of, like, back 3 years ago, we would have gone, oh, he's going to hit his head on the crossbar. It's a touchdown. Strike up the band.
Yeah, they were committed. They were more committed to the run. I kind of looked at it, too, because Chris Collinsworth gave some love to Bobby Evans,
Oklahoma,
and David Edwards, the rookie out of Wisconsin, who played and played pretty well. And I looked at the rushing on a total game. They were over 100 yards.
Yeah.
I think they were 110 yards for the game. On a per-play basis, they weren't much better. Actually, they were worse than they were most of the year. So their average per play, per rush this year, is 3.8 yards, 23rd in the NFL. They were 3.2 last night. They were just more committed to the run, like you said. They didn't trust Jared Goff as much, so they just ran it more and racked up more yards.
Right. They weren't going to let Khalil Mack come around the edge and get a strip sack fumble or do something like that either, too. So they just said, we can win with our defense tonight. Let's do that.
Right.
And that's where I give Sean McVay a lot of credit. He has realized, like, what he needs to do to win. He's not worried about, like, oh, I got to have sexy numbers. I'm Sean McVay, and I need to live up to this reputation of, like, 500 yards of offense every game. He's in reality and realizes that this is the way it's going to be this year, and I give him a lot of credit for that. Also, I'm not so sure. I'm throwing the challenge flag on the hip hip issue with Trubisky.
So we learned today from Matt Nagy.
Yes.
He said Mitch got a hip pointer in the second quarter.
Yeah.
And then as far as his removal late in the game, with what was it, 2.5 minutes to go, three minutes to go?
Right.
Matt Nagy said, quote, it had nothing to do with his play. Zero.
Yeah. I just throw the challenge flag there. Mm-hmm. I watched
these calls rarely get overturned though. So
you're right. They rarely do. This is just the things that jump out to me. Trubisky, I watch the quarterbacks intensely when I'm watching a game, and I'm also on a Sunday night football game. I've recorded the game because I do the pregame, and then I get home a little after kickoff. So by the time I get changed and everything like that, I'm like maybe 30 minutes behind as I'm watching the game. I rewind plays a lot, so it's great. I'm like, oh, what happened on that third down? I have a great feel. Yeah. I never saw him once motion towards his hip the whole game. Not one time. He even scrambled. He threw a few throws on the run. Not one time did he go, there was none of that.
Yeah.
I think he was benched. I think Matt Nagy's trying to protect him, and I think Matt Nagy's trying to protect himself as well there. I would never have benched him right there in that moment. Okay, I don't understand that. As crappy as he might have been, he did lead them down for a touchdown drive at one point during the night, right, in the third quarter. And it's just impossible for a backup quarterback to come back in that situation and think, oh, yeah, he'll drive us down. Yeah, right. Against the Rams defense, your O-line stinks. Like, your best chance was with Trubisky. And the other thing I'll just say where I'm throwing the challenge flag, well, anybody out there, watch the post-game press conference with Trubisky. He's got his hat pulled down. He won't even look up because – I don't think he's telling the truth, and I think he knows it, and he's trying to not make eye contact with anybody, and he keeps talking about a hip region. What? When you get hurt, people talk specifically about the injury. They don't the ankle region. They go, I turned my ankle.
Or how it's affecting him.
I fell hard on my shoulder.
Or I couldn't run. I wasn't
There was none of that. And so it's erroneous on all counts there.
Yeah.
I just don't believe it. But either way, Rams D is special. Bears D is still really good. And the Bears had chances last night. I mean, you miss a field goal. You missed two field goals.
Those are back. Those problems
are back. Yeah, they're back. They're kind of a dumpster fire. And they can't get out of their own way.
Problems with the Bears. Rams get a much-needed victory. They improve to 6-4.
Yeah.
Get rid of that sheet right there.
Get rid of that sheet.
And now, almost. That was the closest I've ever come to
get
swearing
rid of that
on the podcast.
Get
deep dive time?
Here. The deep dive.
Time for the deep dive. A little segment we like to call deep dive. And this game got the most votes. You put four games on your Twitter feed.
Right.
And everyone at home gets to vote on what game they want to see. You dive deep into the film. And 49ers are very interesting to a lot of people out there right now.
Yeah.
Both offensively and defensively.
Yes, they are.
So let's start with the 49ers offense versus the Cardinals defense.
Yep.
You look at the numbers for Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's 424 yards, and that pops at you.
Definitely.
I do feel like you've looked at the film. I feel like a lot of that may have been yards after the catch. We're not necessarily going downfield a ton.
Definitely, screen game is a huge part of it. I mean, screen games or short passes. I mean, you just think about, Richie James, he threw a screen for him for 57 yards. You know, he threw a shallow cross to Tevin Coleman, who I want to say went for 37 yards. Okay, so there's over 100 yards in two completions alone where you didn't throw the ball anywhere. And then there was a number of other screens throughout the game, whether it was to receivers, the tight end. Juszczyk, out of his 63 yards receiving, I would bet you at least 20 to 30 were in the screen game, which is Kyle Shanahan. He's phenomenal at that, and that's why they're very hard to defend.
And Debo Samuel.
Debo Samuel's a stud.
34 yards, 50 of those came after the catch. So 49ers win this game 36-26. They needed to score.
Yes, they did.
They don't always need to score a ton, but the Cardinals, they're doing some things on offense that we'll look at in just a little bit.
Right.
So the 49ers needed their offense to put up some points, and they were able to do that.
And Jimmy Garoppolo did some really good things. So, I mean, people need to know that. Now, I mean, did he have some bonehead mistakes? Yes, and we'll get into those in a second, and I'll tell you what he did. But either way, he did make a lot of big throws. And, you know, the thing I love about Jimmy Garoppolo is he does slide around the pocket and make some awkward delivery throws, and he's unfazed by what people are doing to him or around him. Yeah, I really give it. He's tough in the pocket. Like, he's not seeing, ghosts or hearing footsteps or doing anything like that. Now, the big thing is this. What we're seeing when teams are playing the San Francisco 49ers and – oh, here. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Speaking of ghosts, I think your quarterback, Tom Brady, saw a few yesterday. I think maybe my number 9 was right. but either way, okay, is With Garoppolo and the 49ers offense for the second week in a row, the Seahawks might have cracked the code here, and this is what I think the Cardinals did. The Cardinals crowded the line of scrimmage. So I think everybody's now going to the 49ers going, we're not going to let this Shanahan run game just expose us. Because once that exposes you, the play actions, the bootlegs, everything starts to go crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So he's really he was forced, Kyle Shanahan is who I'm saying he, to drop back and pass. They were outnumbered most of the time. And that was really the theme of the day. And then came in the screens and the passes and everything. But they ran three plays on offense, and they were down 9-0. So Arizona kind of controlled the flow early on with their offense, put them kind of behind the eight ball, and it got better from there. And really, like I said, the Richie James Jr. screen was really what jump-started the team. They were down 16-0. That got them going, and then they finally started to move the ball pretty much on a consistent basis.
I love to give numbers that back up what you're saying.
Yeah.
And Tevin Coleman faced an eight-man box 67% of the time.
Awesome.
Most of any running back this week in the NFL.
It was 8 and 9 guys within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage almost every time until the very end of the game when they knew they were going to have to throw it.
Steve Berman, who Bay Area sports guy at the Bay Area, a friend of mine who works for the Athletic now, who said that on his timeline, in a matter of minutes, Jimmy Garoppolo is compared to both Jameis Winston and Joe Montana. It just goes back and forth. You know, it's just like you see one of those interceptions where you say,
sure,
what is he thinking? How could he do that? And then you see a couple plays later where you're like, oh, that was really good. Nice throw, a good read, and everything like that. So, you know, the jury's still out.
Well, the jury is still out. Well, because, you know, the mistakes are, they're like bonehead mistakes right now where you just go, what the heck? Now, the first interception, he's throwing like a little curl route to the left side. And I don't think, you know, let's take this into account. The best player in their offense is not there, and that's Kittle. So he's not out there. I don't think Emmanuel Sanders was 100% yesterday either.
Right.
But he's throwing a curl. They're up 17-16, and you're going, here they go. They're going to start controlling the game. Arizona was having a hard time moving the ball. And really, there's a dropping linebacker, Hicks. He's there, and I don't know what he saw. Now, the one thing I'll say is Chandler Jones came around the edge. And maybe, I can't tell for sure on film, and I couldn't tell on TV, maybe hits his elbow just a little as he's throwing the ball. Maybe.
Yeah.
And I'm being kind there. I'm just not sure. But either way, that goes right into Hicks's chest, and he has a good return, and that leads to a field goal for the Arizona Cardinals. Now, later on in the game, what happened there is they started to blitz more, and they got a free blitzer off the edge, and I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo realized he was hot, as we say in the NFL world, meaning hot like we can't protect this. There's a guy running free at me, and I got to get the ball out of my hand. And he's throwing a ball down the middle to Dwelly and just throws it way behind him, I think because the blitz caught him by surprise, and he kind of, oh, gosh, and tried to rush it out, and then he threw it three or four feet behind the guy for an interception in a really big moment. But thankfully, the defense got the stop. And then, let's not forget, he did drive them down there to win the game.
Absolutely.
They play a 65-yard drive.
That's where the Joe Montana comes in.
Makes
big plays to win games.
Well, he's certainly not – I don't think he's a guy that's like chokes under the pressure or anything like that. I think he's kind of just free will, and I don't even think he thinks about it much. He just kind of lets it fly. And on that play specifically, they brought two middle linebackers for a blitz. They brought the safety up for the blitz. And then they had the defensive ends drop out. And it was just the perfect play call at the perfect time. Because then, you know, the Wilson, the running back, end up one-on-one with Chandler Jones downfield. And that's just not a matchup Chandler Jones is going to win. Chandler Jones at first thinks he's running to the flat. He cuts across his face. Jimmy Garoppolo dumps it off. And then, bam, game over.
And give him credit because this is, the game after you lost to Seattle in overtime, and you give him every reason to think, okay, here we go again late in the game. We're having some issues. Cardinals have been playing well. Are we going to make a play this time like we didn't against Seattle last time? You did. I do wonder if there have been some questions about the protection that Jimmy Garoppolo has gotten.
This hasn't been great.
Offensive line, you got McGlinchey there. They've had some injuries with Joe Staley.
Definitely.
But they're getting some of the guys back. I don't know if they're, they're back, but are they back being themselves?
Right. Well, Joe Staley was out again, right? Yeah. So he wasn't in. So there was definitely some issues at left tackle. McGlinchey's not back to playing totally 100% yet either. So he had a few moments again where he got a beat. But I think the big thing overall is teams are just trying to overwhelm the 49ers up front with numbers and people to take away the run game and then maybe just get in the face of Jimmy Garoppolo. Because why? They're just – it's really one of the few things you can do because Shanahan's scheme is so special that you got to kind of force their hand some way, somehow. And I think that's the approach, you know, teams are trying to take now that we saw Seattle do it last week.
Ross Dwelly,
yeah,
played 90% of the snaps, had two touchdowns. So they didn't need George Kittle. He got Ross Dwelly.
I
think he had 14 total yards, but
he did a good job, right? Yeah. He came scot-free on a shallow cross for one touchdown, and I can't remember exactly what he did on the second one. I can't remember what the hell he did. But either way, it was, yes, a good performance.
It counted.
Right? Yes,
And I was looking at the total numbers for – and this is kind of interesting to me because – you know, the 49ers rushing yards per game is second in the NFL, but their rushing yards per play is 16th in the NFL.
Ooh.
So they are relying on the run.
So that tells you. They're running the ball too much, really.
Their passing game,
yards
per game, 15th in the NFL. Passing yards per play, 8th in the NFL.
Yeah, that tells you. When they drop back to pass, they strike. And that tells you within those numbers, too, that they're probably running the ball a hair too much. Mm. But that's what they do. He's going to try to control the clock, do that. And Shanahan's ability to stay patient with the run game is so important to their pass game because of all the play action. One of the things I think, I don't know if you saw in my notes, but just all the misdirection, bootlegs, play action passes, screens, they're unreal.
It's like the rules, plays.
The first touchdown, he totally effed up the rules on the Arizona Cardinals, and that's what he's amazing at. And I really need to do a specific thing to show what Shanahan does to F up rules. But they were playing 3-deep zone, if you're real quick here.
Yeah.
3-deep zone, and what he does is he has the outside receiver run an out route. They're on the, I'm going to say, what were they on? The 4-yard line. So that was the first touchdown pass to Dwelly. He has a 5-yard out route, okay? Then Dwelly is going to run up the field and then to the back corner. So like a flag route, a corner route, right? And then they had the back come out of the backfield to that side. So now the backers see the back coming out of the backfield. You're on the 4-yard line, the corner, but who's supposed to be playing 3-deep, right? Zone. Well, he sees a guy run a 5-yard out in the end zone. He goes, man, I can't just let him run a 5-yard out and go back into my third and say, oh, well, coach, I was in 3-deep. I'm going back there, right? Then it would have been a touchdown to that guy. So he found the rules of the defense in that specific area and stressed them out to where the corner's in a no-win situation. And I would love to show you the play on film because when the play's over, the safety's like, you got to go back there. And he's like, you could see, he's like, but there's a fucking 5-yard out right there. Like, I can't go back there.
And then the other player goes, Shanahan. Newman.
Shanahan, yes. And that's what I mean by Kyle Shanahan breaking the rules of a defense more times than not.
Can I give a little love to a Cardinals linebacker? You mentioned him, Jordan Hicks. He had the interception, right?
Yep, Jordan Hicks.
Two quarterback hits on Jimmy Garoppolo. 12 combined tackles, second most this week of any NFL player.
Yeah, he's a player, man.
Has played every snap for the Cardinals this season. Played at Texas, so I thought you'd love him for that. So Jordan Hicks, just a little more love for Jordan Hicks, even though, you know, people saw him on.
Yeah, and he went to Texas, so, you know,
he
went
to Texas,
that's right. Yeah, but
he was cool in your book even before all those numbers I threw out.
Definitely. Well, he was a baller in Philadelphia before. But, yeah, so that play we just explained, just to be clear, that was the code breaker was Dwelly's first touchdown. The second one was the shallow cross where he came wide open. There was, like, four receivers to a side. He came across, wide open touchdown. But, hey, right now, this is what teams are going to do when they play the San Francisco 49ers. It's going to be crowd the line of scrimmage. Let's see if Jimmy Garoppolo can beat us. And he's 1-for-1 right now. And he was very close to being 2-0 in that.
424 yards.
Right.
Tough to argue with that. Are we good?
Yep. Yeah,
we're
good.
Offense and defense?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Take that. Let's move over to the Cardinals.
Take that sheet.
Cardinals O versus the 49ers D. So we got Kyler Murray. 24-33, 150 yards. So we talked about Drew Brees not throwing the ball downfield. He was, you know, the second lowest in the NFL. Kyler Murray was the first. So they didn't attack downfield.
Nope.
Maybe the 49ers didn't give him that, but he did have two touchdowns. He did run for 67 yards and a touchdown. So even if they aren't throwing the ball downfield, he's super, super dangerous. And I think he showed
super
that again.
Dangerous. Yeah. I mean, got a big pass interference that set up the first field goal. That was one of the disappointments for them in the game. You know, they get down close. They don't score a touchdown. They have to settle for a field goal in the first drive to go up 3-0. Second drive, they do a great job. Now, what they did is, hey, they're outmatched by the 49ers on defense. The Arizona Cardinals O-line's not good, so they went to the short passing game. They went to, hey, let's go out on the edge and get screen passes and get second and five and do that. Yeah. And then we'll have a run here and there. And then Kyler Murray ran the ball pretty well in the first half. But once the 49ers got a feel for the attack of what the Cardinals were doing, it slowed down in a hurry from that point on. But either way, I don't care what. Murray is just special. What he does, the Kyler Murray effect is real. And he messes with defenses, too, because just like Russell Wilson or Cam Newton in his prime, or we're seeing Lamar Jackson, you're a little limited and a little scared of as a defensive play caller because of his running ability and his scrambling ability, where you don't want to bring crazy blitzes. You don't want to bring some crazy blitz off this edge, and it's a quarterback design run that way. And all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, well, we had all these guys over here, and now we only have two over here, and we're screwed. And there goes Kyler Murray. So his special talent alone gives them an advantage against a defense that is far superior than this Arizona Cardinals offense.
So the only thing holding them back maybe, and they played a superior
yep.
49ers, but from throwing the ball and opening up a little bit more, it's certainly not Kyler Murray and his arm strength and his accuracy.
No, he's a phenomenal
downfield offensive line in time.
Yes.
They really don't have the playmaker on the outside.
No, right? Not yet. They definitely don't. They don't have, and you hit it, I think, them all. Plus, they don't have really a downhill run game. They don't. You know, their team is very horizontal. It's, you know, Kyler Murray running on the edge, Kyler Murray running the edge. Screen pass on the edge to the receivers real quick because he can get the ball out of his hands so quickly. When they run the ball with Kenyon Drake, it's usually a horizontal type of run that way as well. Yeah, they just don't have the big hog mollies up front to open up big holes that way. And I think Cliff Kingsbury's still figuring out how he wants to run the football in the NFL. So those are the big things to me. They did a good job early on. I think just game plan-wise, they had a few wrinkles. Kyler Murray was on fire.
You were not sold on Cliff Kingsbury first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they came in talking a big game.
Right.
Some of that was not them talking. It was, you know, media talking about him, but said that he was going to come in and you know, throw stuff out there that we hadn't seen in the NFL before.
Yeah.
Didn't really see a whole lot of that the first few weeks. I don't know that we're seeing anything that we haven't seen before.
No.
Do you respect kind of what you've seen from Cliff the last few weeks?
Totally, totally. His offensive playbook's growing. It really is. He's stealing plays from everybody. He's making Kyler Murray going underneath the center. They're doing more and more. Cliff is, I think, he's smart enough to get this. I think that's what he's proven to me to this point, that, like, he definitely has a future as a head coach because he's I think he realized, like, oh, my Texas Tech air raid offense is just not going to be enough in the NFL. You know, there's just not enough bells and whistles and tricks and things like that and different personnel sets. But, yes, they're clearly undermanned as far as the talent is concerned. Christian Kirk is very good. But the big thing is lack of run game, lack of really good pass protection. And that would be my one complaint about Cliff Kingsbury so far, too. He's got to be a little more intricate in details about pass protection. Too many times they have five blockers, the team sends five rushers, and one's free. No, you got to figure it out. You got to be 5-on-5. You can't let one guy, you know, you have five blockers and they got five rushers.
No,
you can't let him get free.
Kyler, just make a miss.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the way they, yes. And in the air raid, a lot of times it was throw it quick and get it out of your hands, but it's just not going to work in the NFL that way. So that would be one thing. The one thing that I'm amazed with Kyler Murray more than anything is his fadeaway throws. You know, for a small guy, he is amazing. You ready to jib this, McDonald?
Oh, you're standing up for the first
time? Just one time.
Okay.
Just one time, but
you waited until John walked away from the jib, but
well,
that's okay.
He is amazing at, oh, God, here comes somebody to hit me right in the face. And he sees it, and he knows he's small, so he's not going to sit there and be like Tom Brady and just be like, oh, I don't give a damn, hit me, right? So he does a great job of throwing and kind of going away, going with the hit. So it takes away part of the thump of the hit for a small guy. And it's amazing how on target he is. I mean, he threw a deep cross to Christian Kirk early in the game where, I mean, it was just an unbelievable throw. He had two or three where he was just kind of fading away, but he's got great, great arm and hand talent. And, hey, as the game went on, the 49ers dominated. The Arizona Cardinals only had 99 yards of offense in the second half.
Yeah.
So that tells you a lot right there. You know, the turnover, interception, gave him the short field. And, you know, one drive where Kyler Murray had that great run for the touchdown was really the only thing they did in the second
but
half.
But they should feel good, the Cardinals,
yes, they
though,
should.
Of throwing up 26 points.
Definitely.
And getting some guys open. There have been some injuries on the 49ers. They had four healthy linebackers. They have four healthy linebackers. One of those linebackers, give a little love to number 57, Dre Greenlaw. a rookie fifth-round pick out of Arkansas, played over 90% of the snaps for the second week in a row. And so that's kind of the sign of a good defense, right? Uh-huh. It's like the Patriots can do this too. You lose some guys in injuries. You can replace them with some inexperience.
Definitely.
And not, you know, they gave up probably more yards and points than they wanted to, but still not break.
No, didn't break. You're exactly right. And they're ferocious on defense still. And, yeah, they're banged up. They're going through a little lull right now. Every team does it. Yeah, they're 9-1 still. They found ways to win games when they didn't play their best throughout the year. And I think they'll start to hit on all cylinders once again, especially once they get George Kittle back in the lineup. That will change a lot of stuff for them.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Have we talked everything we could talk about 49ers?
I think so. Okay. Excuse me.
Clearing your throat?
I am.
This is a big moment.
Big moment for me. All right, now is time for the Verizon Best Of. Now we have the best of week 11 presented by Verizon, the network that more people rely on, okay? The network more people rely on. I should get that straight. I can't read that well. But either way, Verizon is a big part of my family. I will say that. All my phones are Verizon. I've been a Verizon customer since probably college, just to throw that out there. Okay, Verizon, I hope you're happy with me.
And here in Connecticut, yeah, we just switched to Verizon as well.
Right.
Because they allow a lot of trees.
Right.
When you have a lot of trees, you need to be able to make the calls still. And we can do that.
Well, yeah, you definitely. Hills and trees.
Hills
you're
and
right.
trees
you
are,
need it. You need the network, and that can be a
like
pain
a
in the butt.
It's like a kryptonite to cell phones.
It is.
Hills and trees.
Definitely.
We have a lot of them in Connecticut.
We do. We have a lot of them. All right, so we got one for – we're going to do offense and defense for Verizon Best
Of. The best of the week in offense and then the best of the week in defense.
And so. I'm going with Dak Prescott when we go offense.
Okay.
I mean, the big D in Dallas is not for their defense. It's for Dak Prescott right now. And I just can't get over the way he played yesterday. Really the way he played last week in a loss to the Minnesota Vikings. But to throw, you know, for 444 yards, 3 touchdowns, no run game going, 29 of 46, really made no bad decisions throughout the game, made some really high-level throws where, hey, the coverage was pretty good, and you went, man, he fitted in there. He's dangerous and feeling it right now. And I don't know if you saw like what Ezekiel Elliott said after the game. Ezekiel Elliott made a comment like, I've never seen Dak play like this. Like, this is unbelievable what I'm watching right now. I'm paraphrasing a little, but that's basically what he was saying. And it's Dak's team right now. You know, their run game's been a little inconsistent this year. You've heard my concerns about Ezekiel Elliott. Dak Prescott, just tremendous leader, fearless in the pocket, can move when he needs to. But more than anything, he is looking to strike downfield, whether it's outside to Michael Gallup or Amari Cooper. And then when they're healthy and everything's going, he's got Randall Cobb to work the middle of the field. That's where you start to go, man, what do we defend on this Dallas Cowboy offense? And this Dallas Cowboy offense is number one in football. And the big reason is because of Dak Prescott and his ability, what he does before the play at the line of scrimmage, and then, of course, when the ball is snapped. He's really showing himself to be one of the better quarterbacks in all of football.
He's going to get paid, and I think there were some that were saying coming into the year, well, yeah, it's easy to be quarterback when you got all these weapons around you, but Zeke Elliott hasn't been the same. You know, 16 attempts in this game, 45 yards, 1 touchdown. He had another one receiving from Dak Prescott, one of his 3 that he threw. And, yeah, and you've got Amari Cooper, who has been great, but he had some down years in Oakland, wasn't necessarily a sure thing when he moved over to Dallas, but it seems like Dak has developed into that. And even in this game, 3 catches for 38 yards for Amari Cooper, and then he goes to Gallup.
He goes to other guys. Exactly. So, yeah, take away Amari Cooper, sure. You want to put Darius Slay on him or, you know, Matt Patricia, you want to double him on certain plays. That's no problem right now. They got weapons, but more than anything is his throwing has taken a leap the last year to where – you know, out of some of these completions we saw yesterday, I think last year I could have looked at like 5 or 6 of those throws and gone, he wouldn't have hit that. Or he just, for some reason, would have missed one where you went, oh, he should hit that one. But he doesn't really miss anything. He is taking advantage of what's there to be had at its fullest more times than not when I watch the film right now. And good for him. And you're right, he's going to get paid. And he is the Verizon Best of the Week on the offensive side of the ball.
Can we talk one second about the Lions' defense in that game?
Yeah, it's atrocious.
Why does this keep happening? So in the NFL, you know, you're like, we want a defensive-minded coach.
Right.
And then your defense is not good. And sometimes it is the opposite. You know, like we want an offensive-minded coach.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden your offense is not that good.
Right.
The Lions' defense, 30th in yards per game, 30th in passing yards given up per game, worst interception rate in the NFL, 28th in sacks per attempt. I mean, that the offense is good enough to be a play. That's a playoff offense.
It is. Even moving especially when Matthew Stafford's there.
Right, and they're even moving the ball without Matthew Stafford
they
there.
Yes.
But that defense is not good.
I think they play too much man-to-man, and they don't have, like, the talent of the New England Patriots to do that. That would be my first thing. They don't have a great pass rush. They're a little banged up at D-tackle, so it's forcing their hands in a lot of different ways. But I think that's the big thing. But more than anything, I just look at them and go, I don't think they have a ton of talent there right now. I still think the talent level needs to improve. And, yeah, I think Matt Patricia probably needs to go back to the drawing board and maybe approach defense a little bit differently and maybe add a few new wrinkles to his repertoire, for lack of a better phrase.
So the Cowboys win. They're your best of the week offensively.
Yes.
What about your best of the week defensively?
My Verizon best of the week defensively is, this is an easy one. It's the New England Patriots. I mean, the New England Patriots, the first drive of the game, they let up a field goal. The second drive of the game, it's 16 plays, 95 yards. You're going, whoa, I've never seen anybody do that to the Patriots this year. Well, that was it. Game over. Game over Philadelphia Eagles in your offense. I mean, just smothering in what they do. First off, it's the best secondary in football. They got so many good cover guys. They're so well coached. They do a good job of mixing in some zone coverage. They like to play man too, but they will mix in some other things. What are we talking about? What Matt Patricia needs to do to keep a defense off balance. And then the big thing is they have this never-ending way of combinations up front with linebackers and defensive linemen, to where it's two linemen and four linebackers, it's two linemen and three linebackers, it's five linebackers and one lineman. It's just all over the place, and you don't know who's blitzing, who's dropping, who's covering my tight end man-to-man, who's covering my back. I don't know. They're all standing up, and I don't know where the hell they're coming from. That's really the greatness of what they have. And the New England Patriots, you know, hey, it's week 11. They played 10 games. They're 9-1. They have ventured into 85 Bears territory. That's where they are.
Wow.
They have, you know.
Like best of all-time territory in the conversation.
All I can do is look at the stats where they are right now, okay? And maybe they're not as physically daunting up front as the Bears or the Ravens were in 2000. But when you take away their stats, yards allowed, points per game, they're beating those two defenses right now. You know, through 11 weeks, all right? And then here, if you're looking at this, the Patriots defense, points allowed, first in football. Yards allowed, first in football. Takeaways, first in football. Sacks, third in football. Third down percentage, of course, first in football. Because when you get to third down, that's Billy Belichick time. And now he knows he's got you. Oh, they got to throw it? Oh, I know what they like to – I know who they like to throw to on third down.
Yeah.
I know the plays they like to go to. And he's got his guys coached up and all over it. But they're special right now. And we're used to Brady and everything and the Patriots carrying the squad there. Yeah, the offense is having some struggles right now. You know, Brady's kind of just got to manage the game and play that way. But the defense can win games almost by themselves. They're one of those teams now that's going, we get to 14 or 17, we're going to win. Let's just not mess this up for the defense.
The Patriots have clinched their 19th straight winning season with that win against the Eagles. Cowboys, they had 20 straight winning seasons from 1966 to 85, the only other team to do it besides the Patriots. So that dominance continues for them. I will throw some love to number 71, their defensive line.
Danny Shelton. Yeah.
Former first-round pick by the Browns.
Yes.
Had a sack, led all defensive linemen this week in the NFL with 7 tackles, had 6 last week versus Baltimore. Playing over 50% of the snaps 4 weeks in a row now.
Yeah, there's a nose tackle too. And this is another thing New England does. They don't get a nose tackle that's 330 pounds and just go, oh, you're only in there on first down to run the ball. They don't care. They like Danny Shelton, I think, to push the pocket more than anything in the pass game. They don't care about the run game. It's his ability to just take people and push the center or the guard back into the quarterback's face to ruin the vision of the quarterback so he can't step into throws, everything like that. Just cloudies the whole picture as a quarterback when people are constantly being pushed on you. And that's a good call by you.
6'2", 345 last year was his first year in New England. He started one game.
Yeah.
He has started 9 so far.
Yeah.
This year.
Yeah, so that just tells you he's playing well. Because if he wasn't, they would bench him in New England.
Yeah.
Hope everybody enjoyed Verizon Best of Week 11.
And we made a rule, too.
That
during that segment, you couldn't swear.
Yeah.
So now that embargo has been lifted.
Now we're gone.
If you choose to.
I swear, Verizon, I won't swear on your segment.
There are two more things in that game that I want to touch on just real quick.
Yep.
And I know you want to talk about Carson Wentz because he's getting a lot of hate.
Yep.
Save that just for 1 second.
Yep.
I want to talk about the trick play. Oh. And you've talked about this a lot. You're like, why are the Patriots, the greatest team of this decade of the last 20 years, why are they the only team doing trick plays? It seems like they don't even need to.
Right.
But they do it all the time. And so you had that Julian Edelman pass. And there's one thing that, you know, and I saw on Twitter and I saw people saying it, that it was a trick play, but it only worked because Ronald Darby fell asleep.
He did.
He was on the back. I don't know that he did, though.
Because I think it was probably cover three. I haven't watched the film of this, but I'll give you answers on Wednesday.
So
more to it.
So there's one interesting part of this play.
Yes.
That you know, he was covering Philip Dorsett, and he hesitated just a second.
Yep.
And Philip Dorsett went across the field and caught it. And so people said, yeah, he fell asleep. Did Ronald Darby? But Josh McDaniel did something weird on that play.
Yeah.
Where the entire offensive line shifted to the left, shifted away from all the action. Almost to indicate that there was like some sort of screen being set up
right
on the left side of the field. And I think that is what gave Ronald Darby like half a second of pause.
Right.
And to think like, oh, wait, do I have to stay home because there's something coming this way? Even though there was no running back going that way, the entire offensive line went left, and then Edelman went right, Dorsett went right, and it was just enough time to open up Philip Dorsett. I may be wrong on
that. Let's watch it together.
I don't think Ronald Darby necessarily fell asleep.
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, first off, he's seeing a ball thrown across the field. So yeah. At first he's going, oh, it's a screen and it's 40 yards away from me.
Right.
Now, to what you're saying, yes, the offensive line, he has a run action kind of coming at him as far as it does look like the left guard is coming out there, maybe starting to set up a screen. I know what you're kind
right.
of saying.
Yeah.
James White's over there. They do throw a lot of screens to him. They are playing a zone defense, all right? So this is not a man-to-man issue. Really, the person to blame in this, more than anything, is not Ronald Darby. It's this guy right here. This is a three-deep zone coverage, right? Look, this guy's not playing anybody man-to-man. He's just dropping out in the area. Look, these guys aren't playing man-to-man. They're dropping into an area.
Right.
So this is 23 is what the heck's his name? 23 on the Eagles. McDowell, McDougals. I'm blanking on his name. Rodney McLeod. Okay. Exactly right. Thank you, Peter Demolitis.
Okay,
but yes.
So maybe he did fall asleep. Well, all right, but I tried to get.
Best
to
team. I'm with you there. I'm with you. Yeah, the Ravens are better. They beat you 37-20, but you're still really good.
The show's falling apart. This is the part.
I'm being heckled by my boss. It's flustering me.
This is the part of the show where it helps if you're sitting at this desk looking at Chris's computer. But we try to describe it the best we can.
Yes, I hope it is.
Interesting play. Yeah, no, you did definitely there. So
yes.
Maybe fell asleep a little bit, but still a pretty smart play.
Yes,
from
great
Josh
play,
McDaniel.
Yes.
And before we put the bow on this game, Carson Wentz. Should we hate on him?
Well, I mean, I just don't understand. Like, I sit there and watch highlight shows and things at night, and it's just like everybody is on Carson Wentz.
20 of 40,
yep.
50%, 214 yards.
Right? They're
numbers aren't great.
No, they're not. But, you know, again, this is a team that couldn't run the ball yesterday, didn't pass protect that well. Lane Johnson went out at right tackle. There was issues there. So they were beating him around the edge a lot on the right side of the ball there. You know, what did the Patriots end up with? 2, 3, 4 sacks, all right? And the biggest thing is, against that secondary, who's going to get open? Who's really that special? That's like people are going to expect to like, oh, wow. You know, Alshon Jeffrey ran 4.7 coming out.
Right.
He hasn't gotten faster, you know, in year whatever it is, 8 in the NFL. So I think that's the other thing we got to look at, too. And, again, Doug Peterson's a really good offensive play caller. But his offense isn't one of those where I just go like Sean Payton or McDaniels or, you know, Shanahan, where I just go every week. I go, oh, my gosh, he game-planned them to death. He totally screwed their scheme. He's kind of just – they do what they do. He knows when to call it. They have all the right plays and everything like that. But they don't have special talent on the outside. And it's not all about Carson Wentz. Could he be better? Yes. You know, did he stand in the pocket of thought too long, too fearlessly a few times in the game yesterday? Definitely. That would be my biggest issue with him. Like, sometimes just get out of the pocket, move, run. Like, they're not open after 4 seconds. They're not coming open. You got to go and do something. Don't let them, though, hit you and swat at the ball and make you fumble and then set up the Patriots for a short field to kick a field goal. You know, that was one way how they got some points one time. So that would be my issue over there. But I don't think you can just blame Carson Wentz for their issues.
And not that I don't believe you, but I just want to check your work with the PFF grades. Mm-hmm. Although they did have Carson Wentz rated 24th best quarterback this week, just ahead of Kyle Allen and Mason Rudolph.
Ooh,
so
right.
They did not like Carson Wentz. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And that's the key right here.
But so I'm sure they're not good. I get it. I mean, it wasn't good. I don't think that's crazy. Now, okay. PFF also, I saw a thing yesterday that said the Rams throw two screens. I watched the game. They threw more than two. So I'm not sure they can count either all the time.
Yeah.
All right. That's just what I'll say there. But, yes, I would say this week, hey, I get it. I understand it. I mean, it was not a good game by him, but there's more issues at play there than just him is my point.
I was trying to start something there between you and PFF. The show is better when you guys go kind of mano head-to-head.
Yeah, I got you. Don't worry.
Okay, so that one is in the book. Okay,
get that sheet out of here.
We've got our second deep dive.
Deep dive?
Between the Ravens and the Texans. We'll start with Mark Ingram. He had some words about his quarterback.
Yes, he did.
Now, I would just like to introduce y'all to the man, the myth, the legend, the MVP front runner. If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me.
Yeah.
I'm right here in B-More outside the bank. If you got an issue with that, come see me.
Whoopi.
I'm about that.
Whoopi.
Big trust.
Whoopi.
Woo, woo. Lamar Jackson in the flesh. Yes, sir.
Big
trust.
No, hey, I'm with you.
Big trust.
Big trust. That must be a thing they got in their locker room.
Big trust.
I'm just not cool enough and I don't know what that means.
So. I know he made the invitation. I will not go see him. I will not argue with him on that.
Oh, no. I know. He would just whoop your ass in 3 seconds.
Yes, correct. Yes, right, I will not. Right. Yeah. Even though he offered to.
It'd be fun, actually. I would enjoy it.
And
it wouldn't
go,
be that much pain for you.
It would be over quickly?
Yeah, it'd be one shot. You wouldn't really, you'd wake up the next morning and you'd be like, what happened? And we'd be like, you got knocked the fuck out.
Hey, Mr. Ingram, I know what you said about Lamar. I just feel like Russell Wilson's been a little bit better this year, but I just wanted to come see you because you said to do that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
He was good again, was Lamar Jackson. I mean, just having such a special year. His line for this one, I'll start with his rushing line. 9 rushes, 86 yards. So he did that again.
Yes, he did.
17 to 24, 222 yards, 4 touchdowns through the air, no interceptions. Last 5 games for Lamar, he has 13 touchdowns, 0 turnovers, no interceptions, no fumbles. He is just playing about as well an overall game as you can play as a quarterback. Right,
he's the MVP right now, right? Don't you agree?
So.
Yeah, I do
so.
Too. He would get my vote. If I had a vote right now, Lamar Jackson would be the MVP, just edging out a Russell Wilson, who I think is phenomenal too. But Lamar has been really, really special.
But did the film show that?
The film did show that. It did. It really did. And, you know, I think the things I would take away from the film more than anything, first off, this was a tough matchup. The Texans don't have a great pass rush, especially with no J.J. Watt now. The only guy you really got to worry about rushing the passer is Whitney Mercilus, and it's not like he's a game breaker that way, and he gets the extra attention now that he's really the only guy. So he's almost kind of a mute point. That stinks. Pass coverage has been an issue for the Houston Texans all year long. It was again in this game. You know, even on some of the incompletions he had, he was just like, aggressive and trying to throw the ball down the field, and I want to go, oh man, there's a shallow cross underneath. If he just throws it, it's going to be a 15-20 yard gain. And it wasn't like there were bad decisions because he threw it down the field. He just, you know, missed a down the field throw that he liked.
Yeah.
I get it. I just think the big thing with me is they just put so much stress on a defense. That's what's so impressive with them.
They can't play man effectively against them just because you got too much.
Too much.
To cover.
They have a ton of man beaters where they'll cross you up underneath in the pass game. You know, the bootlegs, which are crossing routes too. So now you're going, whoa, Mark Ingram's going this way, and the tight end and the receivers are going that way. And, yeah, good luck trying to cover that when you're worried about the run game coming down and smashing your face, right? Tight ends coming out of the back, you know, side of the formation behind the line of scrimmage. So it's tough to be able to play man-to-man against that all the time because they will cross you up and it will mess your run fits. So he simplifies you because of his greatness. And then their offense has a great formula. You know, you've heard me say it a million times, but they make you defend every little part of the field with everything they do. And that's the big thing that always jumps out to me with them. But, you know, their pass game, It's always got somebody going deep, whether it's Hollywood Brown or the tight ends. It's a vertical aspect with something shallow cross or crossing underneath.
And you think Hollywood Brown is vital to this offense?
I think Hollywood Brown, other than Lamar Jackson, is the second most important part of this offense.
Really?
Yes, because he is the one guy that can put fear of God into secondary on their team. So I do think they need to be very careful. Like, if he is not all the way healthy, don't throw him out there. You know, if they're they have their eye on the prize, which is winning the Super Bowl. This is key. And, you know, despite with my boss walking by who flustered me a minute ago, okay, the Ravens are the best team in football. If you made me power rank the NFL right now, I am giving the Ravens the edge. I am. And then it'd be really close between it's tough to argue. I mean, they've gone up to Seattle, beat the Seahawks there. You know, yeah, they had some early season slip-ups, but that was a long time ago. I mean, we're talking about what we're seeing. And we're seeing domination ever since the bye week and what they did to the New England Patriots.
Can they beat the Patriots in New England, though?
Well, yeah, that'll be tough. But either way, they match up very well with the Patriots to where I know it will go toe-to-toe no matter what. Like, there's no way the Patriots are ever going to blow the Baltimore Ravens out. That will be a game that goes down to the end. And, of course, we know Belichick will have some wrinkles up his sleeve and all those type of things. But, you know, I just think with the run game, smash up the middle. Oh, Lamar Jackson on the edge. In the run game. Oh my gosh, the pass game, it's very vertical with Andrews and, you know, the other tight ends and Hollywood Brown and Boykin. And then it's, okay, gosh, they're going deep, but yes, they got people going underneath in the shallow part of the, you know, the field too, so that's stressing us out. And then, oh wait, we're worried about the deep routes and the shallow crosses, and oh my gosh, we have the greatest scrambling quarterback in football back there too. We have to remember about him too. So they just put so much pressure on you that way to where that's really what it's impressive. And really kind of controlled this game from get-go. You know, you got to remember they missed a field goal. They missed a fake field goal where they tried to do that early on. So it took them a little while to kind of get in the flow. It was only 14-0 at halftime.
They scored 41 in the game and left some points on the field.
They definitely did. They did. And he left some yards in the pass game on the field.
Sure.
But that's really what it comes down to. And he's throwing it really well. I mean, it's pinpoint. And it's got a lot of mustard behind it. And you know, that's why he's in the lead for the MVP conversation right now.
And Greg Roman doing wonders once again with the offense. It's the best rushing team in the NFL. They average 5.69 yards per rush. Helps when you have Lamar.
Yep.
They're the second best team in the NFL in converting third downs, so it's tough to get them off the field. They're the best in time of possession, 34 minutes and 20 seconds. So it's just like they do all these things that help their defense, who is playing well, and we'll get to in a second. But
yeah,
they're just so many different plays. There was that 39-yard rush for Lamar that I took a look back at, and that you had the Texans, Charles Amenahu, unblocked, had no chance.
No
chance.
Like
a 360, and then Merciless, also unblocked, missed a tackle. And on that same play, 8 yards down the field, Tashawn Gibson, unblocked, missed the tackle.
Right.
And so you have three guys that you literally did not need to block that did not make the
play. He's one of the best open field runners in the game. I mean, I'm talking about anybody. Receivers, running backs, whoever you want to talk about. Like, when him and the ball in space, past the line of scrimmage, watch out. And that's the last thing I'll say here before anything. And then we can move on to the other side of the ball. But one of the things I wrote on the bottom, the variety of the attack just starts to wear you down as the game goes on. You know, just – you know, the plays, okay, then the chasing Lamar, the huge offensive line, the vertical pass game, you just get worn down. There's so many things to think about, let alone the physicality of the Ravens and some of the physical gifted players that they have out there. It's really hard to keep up with them, you know, and then Lamar's ability to throw the ball the way he is, drop arm angles, do all that things, you know, it's tough. And, you know, I wrote at the very end, you know, the Texas front four can't get pressure. And it's tough to blitz these fuckers because of the run game and Lamar's scrambles. They will block it up and take shots, too. So you get caught in a blitz, and all of a sudden you go, oh, damn. You know, they kept 7 men in the block, and now Hollywood Brown's running a post-corner post against our corner, and it's not the matchup we want either. So they just really put a lot of pressure on you, do it a different way than most teams in football, but it's special. And I got to give the Ravens a lot of credit for having the vision of what they've built around Lamar Jackson.
Then you get a guy like Gus Edwards, 63 yards basically untouched for a touchdown.
So
it's like if you weren't worried enough about Lamar and Hollywood and Mark Ingram.
That's what I mean. And then you got to worry about them like just opening up huge holes right down your throat. And you go, holy crap, right. And then Ingram and, they got it all right now.
Lamar has 518 yards this year after a defender closes within 1 yard of him.
Jeez.
Josh Allen is the next closest quarterback with 281.
So yeah.
It's just, even when they get close to Lamar, they're really not that close. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
We've heaped enough praise on Lamar Jackson.
I think so. I think we hit it all.
So let's go over to the Texans O and Ravens D. And it really was supposed to be the battle of Lamar versus Deshaun. You figured, okay, there's a chance this game could be 30-something, 30-something, and it's, you know, coming down to the last possession. The Texans offense just never got going here. Deshaun had 18 at 29, 169 yards, no touchdowns, one interception, was sacked six times.
Yep.
Carlos Hyde had the one touchdown run on a 41-yard, but other than that, I mean, they had nothing going. Give the Ravens defense a lot of that. What did the film show on this?
Well, it's hard to run the ball on the Ravens because they're huge up front on defense too. So that's the first thing. Yeah, it was a disappointing performance by Deshaun Watson. I don't think there's any denying that. All right, you know,
first career regular season loss by more than one possession.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson
that's
blitz.
Right. I've always heard that. You know, I don't think in high school he ever lost a game by more than one possession.
Right.
That's how long his...
Happened in the playoffs against the Colts last year.
Yeah, okay, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah. So
We don't count that. That didn't matter.
I know. Usually
such a
stats
small
don't.
Game. Yes. Such a small game.
Didn't really matter. I will say this. You know, if these two teams do play each other again, the big thing that the Texans will need is they need a healthy Will Fuller. All right? You know, because... The first thing, like we talked about with the Patriots, the Ravens, what makes them special is their secondary. You know, the fact that you can have Jimmy Smith, Marlon Humphrey is one of the best corners in the game, and Marcus Peters out there all at the same time with Earl Thomas and Kanadeh, number 36, back at free safety, you know, they can just match up with you.
Yeah.
And then that allows them, like New England, to do a lot of different things at the line of scrimmage. They do a lot of the similar kind of stuff, stand people up, who's coming, who's blitzing, whatever it is. And the biggest thing I thought more than anything, and where Deshaun Watson, I really think, struggled. He panicked in the pocket too much in the game. You know, he really did. There was too many times where, you know, he started to run around, like the fumble. He didn't need to run. Just stand in there, shuffle, stay in a good throwing position like you see Brady and Rodgers do. He's going to have DeAndre Hopkins coming across the middle. He's wide open. They're going to get a 20-yard gain. But he tried, I just think he tried to make a little too much happen yesterday. There was too many times, there was a few too many throws like that where I said, man, just don't like look for an alley and run. Just kind of stay there and shuffle and move out of the way because there were some plays there to be had. But I think he saw people and he saw a gap and he thought, oh, I can get there. But they always had somebody there for him. There was always a linebacker there spying him or somebody coming off a loop twist that was there to get him. And the big thing is, I think more than anything, where they really slowed down the pass game is they didn't rush him. They did not rush him. This is something I really learned from Rodney Harrison and Coach Dungy over the last few weeks when we did some of our Sunday night football stuff. They didn't let their defensive ends go past Deshaun Watson, right? So think about Deshaun Watson dropping back to pass. He's 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage, right? They didn't, like, fly upfield and go around him to now where he can escape either way. Their rule and what these guys taught me, especially Rodney, is don't ever go past him. Like, kind of push the pocket and always stay even with him. Because then if he tries to shoot inside you, you can engage and there's not a huge hole there. If he tries to go outside you, around you, man, you're going to make him really have to loop around you to get out there and make the play. I thought that was one of the keys to the game, let alone they confused their protection a bunch. Just like New England does. There's six guys standing up. It's who's coming, who's going, who's dropping. I don't know. And, you know, the Texans are a little inexperienced and young on the offensive line, and they screwed up pass protection a few times. And that, like, ultimately was the big thing. Because Wink Martindale, the defensive coach for the Baltimore Ravens, he's one of the best in the biz. He is. He learned from Dean Pees. And a lot of what he's doing. And Dean Pees came from New England. So there's a lot of similarities to what they do on the defensive side of the ball as to what the Patriots do, too.
It's interesting, too, because the defense does seem to come up big.
Yeah.
And I looked at some of the numbers for them. They're 14th in the NFL in yards given up per game, which is middle of the road. They're 20th on a per-play basis, which is telling me that offense definitely is helping out the defense.
Yes.
The time of possession for the Ravens.
They're aggressive. And they will live some chance because they'll play some man-to-man.
So, yeah, on a per-game basis, they're 7th against the rush, but on a per-play basis, it's 20. And so the defense, while good, has benefited I would say a significant amount from how good that offense has been and how many big leads they've gotten out to, too, and made some teams one-dimensional.
I think that's definitely true. And, you know, I think also, too, you know, some of those stats are probably skewed from some of the early season struggles.
Sure.
You know, the Kansas City Chiefs moved the ball on them. The Cleveland Browns had a huge day on them.
Yeah.
You know, so I think some of those, too, skew it a little bit. Yeah. They also had to play Russell Wilson and company where they got up to a huge lead, and then you play prevent. And that lets up a huge bunch of pass plays, too, where you go, yeah, but we were winning like 30-9. But we let up like 200 yards in the last like 15 minutes of the game in passing.
Sure.
So sometimes those can be skewed, right?
Yep.
You know, of course, Brady and company threw the ball well on them, too, at moments. But they made the plays when they had to get off the field or force a turnover. And that's the way they are. And, of course, they don't let you score a whole lot either. I think they're a team that has just gotten better here as of late. Like the last 5-6 weeks, they are a team that is truly on the rise and special that way. And
you got Peters hooking up with Hopkins. I'm interested. What do you think of the year Hopkins has had so far this season?
Hasn't
been huge.
No, it has not been huge. You know, he's a little bit like Michael Thomas to where it's not going to be about, like, always big plays and he's going to catch the ball short and just weave through people and make you miss and go for a 70-yard touchdown. That's not his game. You know, his game is catching tough balls over the middle, 50-50 balls, back shoulders. That's what he really does. He's a good route runner. He works the middle of the field. Teams are taking him away right now. They understand that he's the go-to guy. And, yeah, they switched up on him with Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. And I couldn't really get a beat on why on one play it was Humphrey and why it wasn't Marcus Peters. If I had more time, I would have sat there and tried to figure it out. But I don't work for a team anymore, so I'm not going to sit there and figure it out. But either way, they were taking turns on them. And, you know, I think those are the things that jumped out to me more than anything. I do think that the Texans – their offense has to open up with more schematic plays. You've heard me say that before. I'm going to say it again. They need more man-to-man beaters. They can't let man-to-man coverage just beat them that way and just think, oh, we're going to run post and go routes all game. No, if you're just running post and go routes, that's what happened to like the Kansas City Chiefs when they hit the lull. They started to lose games. Yeah, you could just play man-to-man because if you ran next to them, you were kind of covered. As long as they didn't just blow you off the box and like, whoa, Tyreek's gone. If you just ran with them, you're covered because there's not a lot of route running. And that would be my issue with the Houston Texans. And, you know, the other thing is that Baltimore really does, and I'm a big proponent of this, they always have somebody there for the crossing route. Always. So even if they blitz, they have a linebacker there to where, oh, you want to run a shallow cross because you think you've got pressure and there's an easy place. No, there's always a linebacker there to, oh, here comes a shallow crosser, and he knocks him out of the way. Or if he catches the ball, he's going to get crushed as he catches it. And those are the little things, again, New England does that make things really tough on an offense.
I know we've given love to this player before, but he's having a really good year, and it just keeps continuing. Number 99 for Baltimore,
Matt Judon. Yeah.
Had 4 hits on Deshaun, 3 tackles for a loss in the game, 2 of them were sacks, 1 forced fumble. Went to Grand Valley State in my neck of the woods in the western part of Michigan there. And so he's developing into a star, I think, Matt Judon. So another good game for him. And you also noted here people standing at the line of scrimmage, confused protection. So you think that the Ravens are doing some things. Not only are they talented, but they're also doing things that are throwing off the other
they
offense.
Do. Well, they give you a lot of looks to make you think, oh, no, they're bringing everybody. I got to get the ball out. And then you say, set hut. And this is what New England does, too.
Yeah.
So quarterbacks have certain things they look at in the secondary and go, oh, this is all-out blitz. Like, this is trouble. We can't protect it. They're going to bring more than we have to protect.
Okay.
And they give you those looks to where the quarterback starts to, like, he might signal somebody, hey, you get ready, and then we got to throw this ball quick. And then they drop people out of there, and they play some funky zone coverage behind it, and you go, wait, oh, they only rushed 4 or 5.
You screwed me,
and I called some things to go against the blitz, and now I have nowhere to throw the football.
You look like an idiot.
And they keep you on your toes with that, because then the next time you think, oh, they won't really come this time, and they all come, and then – you know, they run through free, too. So that's kind of the beauty of what they're doing right now.
Is that it?
Damn.
Did we do it? That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
That was a deep, deep dive.
That was a deep dive.
Okay, good.
All right. Peter King, you heard of him?
I have heard
of him. Yes. He is Peter King.
I've met him a couple times.
Good. Yeah.
Very nice man.
He's the man, Peter. The Peter King podcast. I suggest anybody listen to it. And speaking of Lamar Jackson, Peter King was in the Ravens locker room yesterday. And Lamar told him how last year's playoff loss to the Chargers still haunts him and motivates him. Mm. You can hear that whole conversation on Monday's episode of the Peter King podcast. I mean, that's where Peter's awesome. And when Peter's in the locker room after the game getting the best player in football, that's when you know you're kind of a big deal.
This is where they go, media is not allowed. Oh, it's Peter? Yeah, here
yeah
you
you're
go.
Allowed. Or no, Peter doesn't have to deal with it. They
you're
give
right.
Peter his own little time no matter what to talk to a player. That's how awesome Peter
is. Peter can go anywhere. Like, honestly, I feel like if Peter wanted to, he could go take a shower with the team.
Well,
if he really wanted to do that, he probably would be allowed
that would
to
be
that.
Gross, but maybe. You're right. He might have. But he's famous for it, getting you right after the game when thoughts are still in your mind and raw and everything. And, of course, Peter's Football Morning in America column. He's got Ravens GM Eric DaCosta, gives a behind-the-scenes story of how Baltimore drafted Lamar Jackson. So you got a full Lamar Jackson podcast, story on Football Morning in America column. Then on Wednesday's pod, Peter will talk to Raiders radio play-by-play voice, the legend Brent Musburger.
Ooh.
Yes. Download, subscribe wherever you find your podcast, the Peter King Podcast. He is the king of all Peters.
Speaking of the Raiders, it's where we go for this week's
the legal gambolizing. Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims.
It's like the song just makes me happy.
It does too.
I didn't hear
it's
it.
So it's bad it's good. It's so bad it's good.
You need to make a long radio version, like 2.5 minutes, but we'll work on that.
And legal gambolizing is it's a real thing out there, right?
Well, if we were gambolizing, I would not have gambolized on Max Crosby.
Yeah.
Getting, what did he get, four sacks in the game against the Bengals. Raiders beat the Bengals 17-10. Probably should have beat him by more, but whatever.
Yep.
But Max Crosby earns your damn okay.
He deserves it. I mean, he's been a beast really all year long. You know, another guy where the stats really haven't told the whole story about how good he has been. But, yes, you said it yesterday, four sacks. When I turn on games like the Chargers game the week before, he's all around Phillip Rivers. You know, weeks leading up to that, you don't know how much you saw of HBO Inside, you know, the NFL show that they do.
I don't do anything outside of preparing for this podcast.
Hard Knocks. He was a big part of Hard Knocks.
I didn't
see
that.
But he is very talented. He's good in the run game. He is like a psycho, a little bit. And
he was fined $50,000 earlier this month in a game against Houston.
Right. So he's, you know, just got that edge about him, but truly a talented pass rusher and good against
sacks,
the run game.
20 sacks in college
I know.
At Eastern Michigan.
Well, I mean, this is the thing I'll say. I mean, and I'm going to say this right here, and I kind of said this last night on Football Night in America. If you told me he was the fourth pick and Clelin Ferrell, who was the fourth pick, and he was drafted in the fourth round, I would have said, yeah, you're right. That's right. Max Crosby was the fourth pick of the draft.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he certainly outshines their fourth pick of the draft at this point of the year. It's not even close. He's been really special that way. And, hey, Clelin Ferrell is going to be a good player. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if he's ever going to be a superstar or if he was ever worthy of the fourth pick of the draft. But they have a starting defensive end duo there for a long time, two guys who are versatile as far as run stopping and getting after the passer. But, yeah, Max Crosby deserves a lot of credit. The Raiders, this game's misleading just to hit the game real quick.
Yeah.
They outplayed the Bengals. I mean, Josh Jacobs fumbles going in to score, all right? They have another turnover that gave the short field to the Bengals that let them kick their field goal. And I want to say, what was that? That might have been the Derek Carr fumble? I got so many damn plays in my head and crap, man. I can't even remember.
So it could have been more lopsided. But
it was the interception by Derek Carr. He threw an inside slant to Renfro, and Jesse Bates III intercepted it. But the Raiders were clearly the better team on the field. Kind of just let the Bengals hang around a little too long.
Bengals 1-17 over the last 18 games, going back to last season's win against Oakland in Week 15. Oakland only had 4 wins all of last year. Now they have 6. Brett Favre thinks that John Gruden's coach of the year.
I mean, I understand that thought. I think it's one of the best jobs John Gruden's ever done. I do. I mean,
you take into account what happened in the preseason, the circus.
Well,
of
I think that needs to be thought of a little bit because that he did bring the guy there. He was there because of him.
Right.
I don't think he would get my vote right now. I just think if I looked at it right now,
John Harbaugh
or Kyle Shanahan, I think are the two leaders in the clubhouse for me. Those are the two that jump out to me more than anything. And then I think Gruden would probably be my third in that group. along with like Matt LaFleur, who's I think is very close in that conversation too. So I would probably go Shanahan, Harbaugh, Gruden, LaFleur. I think that would be okay. The way I would do it right now. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Subject to change.
It's subject to change. Harbaugh, Shanahan's a tough one. It's very close. I've almost a flip a coin there.
There was a while there where Frank Reich maybe seemed like he would be in the conversation. Still could be.
Yeah.
The Colts get a win over the Jaguars. They improve. The Colts do to 6-4. It was 33-13. And the Nick Foles return where he threw for 296 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. This one I'm going to give you the victory lap.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Because you know why?
Yeah.
Your rivalry with Pro Football Focus, PFF.
Yep.
You know, you guys went back and forth on Twitter a little bit. You came up with your midseason rankings.
Right.
You moved Jacoby Brissett way up.
Right.
You were they dinged you for that.
Well, they did.
They did not agree.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's a deep conversation in general, all right? But either way, Jacoby Brissett, the thing I've liked about him more than anything is he, in the biggest moments, makes big plays. Now, again, this is a Jaguars defense that's very good in pass defense. I mean, I don't even know. I know the Jaguars. I'm just going to look this up as we're sitting here.
Yeah.
You know, let's see where we are here. Am I on defense? Yep, I'm on defense. You know, the Jaguars, they've been struggling as of late. Their run defense is the issue, and that's why they ran for a whole lot of yards yesterday.
264,
yep.
I think.
Jaguars pass defense is 8th in football, all right? So they are a formidable unit there. And let's not forget, there's no T.Y. Hilton, no Devin Funchess.
Yeah.
All right, so that hurts, you know, Jacoby Brissett in the passing game. But I think the turning point of the game was 4th and goal, and the game is 10-7 on the first drive of the second half. And Jacoby Brissett, nobody's open. He scrambles around, runs out to his right, throws a rifle into the front corner of the end zone, touchdown, 17-7. And that's where the game changed forever. Because then the Jaguars got the ball back. They tried to drive the ball. They went for it on a 4th-and-4 themselves, didn't get it. And from that point on, the Colts really kind of bludgeoned them from there on out. And that's where the game was never the same. And he made the big play to kind of get them over the hump. And that's where he's been special to me all year. You know, whether I had him a spot ahead of Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Dak Prescott's maybe proving me wrong over the last few weeks with that. All right? It was nitpicky to begin with.
PFF Jacoby Prescott's been really damn good. Jacoby Brissett is the number 2 quarterback this past week.
Yeah, he's been really damn good. For what's there to be had on a weekly basis, he's pretty freaking good quarterback. And it's not like they have weapons galore because they're a little banged up. Paris Campbell's banged up. You just go down the list.
We can't not discuss the keg stand celebration in this game.
What?
So, Quentin Nelson.
That was amazing.
At the touchdown run, you're seeing the picture here if you're watching along on YouTube. And they had this choreographed. I guess they had discussed it beforehand.
You think?
that if a lineman were to score a touchdown.
Somehow I think they were probably around a real keg when they actually choreographed this.
And they actually discussed who would be the keg. And they determined it would be Mark Glowinski because he was the most stocky and he could squat the most.
Yes.
He could squat a ton.
Right.
So he would be the keg. And then Quentin Nelson did the celebration. A great picture, although it didn't count because they look back on review.
Yep, and he didn't get in.
He didn't get in. No. And did you know that because of that, so the next play, Quentin Nelson could not be on the field because he could not go back to the line after announcing eligible because you have to sit out one play. And so he was not on the field on the next play, and it was the first time that Quentin Nelson has ever missed a snap
in his NFL career. Well, I that would be hilarious if he, like, one point, it like, would have been, like, the all-time consecutive plays later, and it didn't count because of the one play of that little technicality there.
But was it worth it because he still got to do the keg stand celebration?
It is. I mean, that's pretty special. Have you ever done a keg stand in your life?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have.
You have. Yeah. I know. It's been a long time for me.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
But
I did it like once or twice. I was more a fan of like the beer funnel, right? Where you just
You know what? That I did not like.
You didn't like that?
No, that's too much beer. You know, I feel like you can control the keg stand more than you can control the beer funnel.
Right. Yeah.
The beer funnel's way more.
No, beer funnel is just open up your throat and let it go.
Yeah. You're at the mercy of whoever is pouring at the top of the funnel.
Yes. Yes.
But congratulations to the Colts.
Congratulations to the Colts. Way to go.
Okay. So let's go. We got three more.
We're
going to go rapid fire.
How long
here.
Are we going? What, hour and 20 right now?
No, I think we're good.
Hour and 20.
Oh, so we're good.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, so we'll rapid fire for the final three games. The Falcons. Let's go. Give me the headline on the Falcons and the Panthers. 29-3. My headline: Dan Quinn Undertaker GIF. You know that thing or GIF or whatever, however you want to do it.
Yeah.
You know where the Undertaker just leans up.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn's back.
Yeah.
I mean, the Falcons are back somehow. They beat the Saints and then come back and shellack the Carolina Panthers. This is pretty impressive.
Give me some of what they had during the bye week, okay? That would be my headline. Yeah, I mean, again, for the second week in a row, all three phases were great. I mean, had the big punt return for the touchdown. You know, offense was good. Defense caused turnovers and played really well. I think that was the big thing of the game in general was, all right, two things that jump out to me. The Falcons on offense have been more consistent with the run, and not necessarily that it's leading to big numbers, but they're at least running it, so you have to defend it. Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley, that combination is becoming very special. Calvin Ridley is really, really talented, and we know Julio is too. I'm not trying to take anything away. Calvin Ridley is one of those, you know, budding superstars at the wide receiver position. You know, Kyle Allen's red zone interceptions and turnovers were a huge issue in the game. Really made some bad mistakes down there close where they could have made the game competitive at some points, especially the first one. He's kind of moving up in the pocket, has a post to his right.
We have
it's just
here,
way late.
It's over Kyle Allen.
Yeah,
well, it's over?
I don't know if it's over, but it's certainly the luster's off. Yeah. I know that after the last 2 weeks, or really three out of the last 4 weeks, because they laid a damn egg in San Francisco, let's not forget, too.
Yeah.
So it has not looked good as of late. And, yeah, the Panthers, I think, you know, hey, Cam Newton was special. He's better than what people, I think, give him credit for all the time. But the Falcons are on fire. And the last thing I'll say, Raheem Morris going to the defensive side. Raheem was the guy I was with in Tampa. He worked in that staff with Rod Marinelli and Mike Tomlin, and he was a head coach of the Buccaneers at one point because of his defensive ingenuity and being a little creative. And I think he's added a few wrinkles to what they're doing on that side of the ball.
They got so many former head coaches on that coaching staff.
Yeah, they do.
At some point, all those great minds together would figure something out. Matt Ryan, they threw the ball deep downfield on passes 20 or more yards downfield, 4 of 5 for 144 yards. The funny thing is that Kyle Allen threw 50 times total in the game. Only two of them were 20 yards down the field, didn't complete either one of them.
Jeez.
One of the ones that Matt Ryan threw down the field,
it
was Luke Kuechly one-on-one with Julio Jones.
Way down the
48
middle.
48 yards
I
down
remember.
The field. And they had a safety on the field, Eric Reed, who decided to double-team Russell Gage instead of helping out his friend Luke Kuechly.
Well, I think Julio he's doing Jones. What his job is, and I'll tell you these answers maybe when we do, like, what the fuck happened on Wednesday podcast.
That's a good one. Throw that in.
But I would bet you that was Tampa 2, where Kuechly's responsible for the middle of the field, and they got him matched up against Julio. And, of course, yes, that does not favor Kuechly.
That's hard.
Yeah.
So a good day for Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons. A good day for Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. The Bills improved to 7-3. They beat the Dolphins, and my headline for that one is Bills steamrolling through the FCS schedule. I think they will make the championship, the national championship.
You're funny.
Against North Dakota State and James Madison. It seems like they never play anyone, but that is their schedule.
Yeah.
And they clean up on the Miami Dolphins in what might have been Josh Allen's, you know, best game as a pro.
Yeah, I it's up there. I think that is the headline to me. It might be the best, cleanest game we've seen him play to this point. Yeah, maybe didn't have, like, all the highlight plays we've seen him have in other games. But in those games where he's had those highlight plays, he's had one or two bonehead mistakes. He's got big talent. I mean, he does. He's got a Brett Favre way about him a little bit because he's a gunslinger. He never thinks there's a throw in the history of the planet that he can't make or fit it in there. Of course, he's a phenomenal athlete. Had all those 100-yard rushing games last year. But, yeah, it was. I mean, pinpoint throws, took care of the football. If Buffalo wants to be serious in the AFC, you know, their defense, we know it's good. It's got to continue to play good because they kind of hit some bad spots here of late, but were better yesterday. And he's going to play clean football because I don't know if they're going to be able to depend on their run game to consistently win either. Yeah. This game was interesting. They went up 16-0. The Dolphins got the ball 16-7, go down, score 16-7, kick an onside kick and recover it. And Fitzpatrick hits Allen Hurns down the middle of the field, and it's a big gainer. And as he's kind of tucking it to run, he fumbled it. Nobody touched him or anything, and that's where the game kind of broke open. They kind of had a chance to get it back in the game, make it a close. That didn't happen. It was never the same after that point.
John Brown was really good for the Bills. 9 catches, 137 yards, 2 touchdowns. A lot of that versus press coverage. 7 catches, 110 yards, and those two TDs came against press coverage.
Yeah.
Most by any player in a game this season.
Well, yeah, you give him press and Kyle, I mean, with the Josh Allen's like willingness and want to throw the ball down the field, that could be scary.
Bill sacked Ryan Fitzpatrick 7 times with 8 different players. There was a half a sack in there.
Damn.
Ed Oliver had a sack. in just 2 seconds. It was the third fastest sack this season. And before we move on to our last game, what do you think of Ed Oliver? There was a lot. We talked about him a lot going into the draft.
Yes.
The overall pick out of Houston. Just has 2 sacks on the year. They're both against Miami now. You can't really, you know, judge necessarily defensive linemen by the numbers, but has he been what we thought he would be?
No, I don't think he's been as good as I thought he was going to be. He's been good, but I don't think, like, the games I've really studied on film, he doesn't pop the way I was expecting him to pop. Now, again, he's a rookie. I get that. He starts. He plays a lot of plays for them. But, yeah, maybe hasn't been as dominant and just wrecking chaos quite the way I would have thought. And maybe that comes down. Yeah, he just hasn't been quite that way yet. Again, always – you got rookies in the NFL. We'll see where it goes. It's a learning process, and – I'm sure he's thinking a lot and being taught more than he ever could have imagined coming out of Houston.
And speaking of a learning process for a rookie,
I am.
We got Dwayne Haskins. The Washington goes down. They're 1-9. They lose to the Jets. Jets get the win. Mm-hmm. My headline for this one is, quote, life is hard, because that is exactly what Dwayne Haskins said after the game. He goes, life is hard. You got to work harder, which I think is you need the opposite advice. If life is hard, take a break. You know, it's already hard. Don't work hard.
Yeah,
you gotta take a break there.
Good advice to young Cleveland out there.
But Sam Darnold was good, and the Jets beat a team that's just not very good.
Not very good.
What's your assessment?
No, I think Sam Darnold is where it would start for me. I just felt like there were so many times, and again, this was not like center TV, like, oh my gosh, Jets, Redskins, I need to watch every play. But every time I looked up, I felt like I saw Sam Darnold bootlegging or kind of escaping out of the pocket, making a big throw, made one great throw in the pocket to Jamison Crowder for a touchdown down the left sideline. Of course, Jamal Adams and what I saw from the highlights. I mean, he's the best safety in football. He's the best player on their team right now. He's special. And you know, I don't love the way what I've seen from Dwayne Haskins yet. Now, I know, like, he doesn't have a lot of talent around him. You know, they're not, like, spectacular on either side of the ball. Do I see power in his arms and things that I liked and his size and all that? Yes. But I also see a number of throws where I just go, ugh, and like, ooh, I don't really like the way that form looks and things like that. So, again, this is a dysfunctional franchise right now who made a coaching change, and he's kind of stuck in the middle of it. Yeah. And I wasn't expecting him to, you know, make my jaw drop on a weekly basis right now.
And you mentioned it, too, when they fired Jay Gruden. You said they fired the guy that could probably help him the most.
I agree. Yes, that's what I think about a lot. He's a guy that could have helped him develop, but obviously they didn't want to stay the course there. And now they got Bill Callahan, who's, again, not bad. He understands quarterbacks, too, but he's been more of an offensive line coach, really, ever since he left Nebraska as the head
coach.
And
I will give a damn okay. Washington did score their first touchdown in 4 games. So,
well,
Got in
the end
zone.
Is that the screen pass to Darius Geis?
Scoring two of them, I think.
Yeah, well, Darius Geis, I think, got a screen pass.
Oh, the one that broke.
Yeah,
it
broke down the right side.
That
was it. Yeah. All right.
All right, good.
All right, we did it. Get that sheet out of here.
Got it there. That sheet is done.
All right, you know what's coming. Wednesday, What the Fuck Happened podcast will be here. John McDonald, you'll be here on Wednesday. He's tired of standing. He's telling us to shut the hell up and wrap this podcast up.
I've got Chargers tonight, by the way.
Do you really? Yeah. Going Chargers. Are you saying that seriously, or are you giving me, like, sarcastic?
No, I do think that Phillip Rivers will bounce back and they'll tear up that defense.
Yeah,
I do think that they have a chance.
I think it'll be really close. I'm going to pick the Chiefs in a close one, 24-23. Subscribe, rate, review. Hey, questions about any specific plays? I think that's something we're going to think about starting up here. What the fuck happened on certain plays for the Wednesday podcast? How about you guys get at me on social media? Whatever you want to know, at CSimsQB on Twitter, at SimsUnButton on Instagram, and maybe I'll answer some of those questions and we'll get into it on Wednesday. Please subscribe, rate, review. Peace out. We're done. I'm in the man.
Peace.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.